Okay, today is January 9th, 2018. Okay, what is your name?
My name is Lindsay Bird.
And where do you live?
I live in Ashland, Kansas.
And what is your occupation?
I'm a dispatcher for the Clark County Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
And also, we do jail management and all that. So.
Okay, and how old are you?
31 years old.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the Starbuck Fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire in general?
Very early on, we had an agency assist down in Oklahoma where Inglewood Fire was fighting. I can't remember the name of the town, but
there.
Yeah, in Gate. It was really near Gate, and we were trying to have units over there. And I think we're really good about our county assistance, where we go to Oklahoma or surrounding counties and try to help when we can. And so Inglewood Fire was down that way trying to help, probably about 10 o'clock in the morning, maybe earlier. It seemed like it was early on that they were trying to fight this fire that was in Oklahoma.
So were you were at work?
Yes.
And you were dispatching at the time when you heard about the fire?
Yes. Okay. I had gone to work at 7 o'clock in the morning that day.
And then had you been getting a lot of calls about the fire, or was the first when they asked for mutual aid for Inglewood to come help Gate?
Really, the first time I heard about it was about 10 o'clock in the morning. We were doing kind of a standard mutual aid for Gate, Oklahoma. And things didn't really pick up until about later in the afternoon, when you could see the smoke coming on the horizon. We started to look at the radar very closely. Things were getting kind of hectic, and Inglewood was asking for more assistance for the mutual aid. And you could tell the situation was getting worse by the hour, really.
So as a dispatcher for the sheriff's office, part of your job is dispatching fire trucks, or for the fire department, you do all of their dispatch information?
Yes, ma'am.
Call all the trucks and all that? And so did you have all of the departments in Clark County out fighting fire at some point?
It seemed, yeah, definitely later on in the afternoon. I think we had all our units dispatched. I think it was probably, I mean, don't quote me on this part because I'm just going off of memory. It just seemed like later on in the afternoon, after lunch hour, is when things really became dire, and we were trying to pull all units we could. And I think that's when we started having Mineola units involved for... Can I see the fire?
The fire north? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there was the fire that broke up around the wind farm, and we really became all hands on deck. And I can't tell you exactly what time we started calling for assistance, but I know it's been recorded, and all that information has gone to Millie when we were asking for surrounding county assistance.
So when you were first started, like, say, around 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. were you dispatching by yourself?
Yes.
And then toward the afternoon, like say 1:32, did you have help to dispatch?
I don't recall really asking for help until it started getting really hectic, maybe 2 or 3 in the afternoon. I work with Stacy Knowles, who's the office administrator, but she also is the dispatch supervisor, and she provided assistance. She will jump in and just help, and it's such a common thing where we're just doing as much as we can by ourselves, but I was really grateful that day to have her help because she was able to jump right in and help me a lot. I actually ended up staying until 2 o'clock that morning, but it seems like the worst calls I started getting was after the evacuation, and that's really when I needed Stacy's help, is when we had people just asking what's going on. We had some emergency calls that people were getting stuck in the smoke, they were getting stranded, and that's really when I was very thankful for the additional help.
So you were fielding 911 calls,
mm-hmm.
regular telephone calls.
Yes.
And dispatch calls.
and also checking on inmates when we could.
Yeah. So we had to serve them supper, right?
Yes, we had to put them kind of on hold, and were a little nervous. But
did you have a full cell?
I recall only maybe 2 to 3 inmates. It wasn't too bad. Yeah. I remember them asking, you know, are we going to be okay? And I just told them, you know, everybody's been evacuated. I'm here. If I feel safe here, then you should feel safe here too. So it was just a different situation.
So at some point, they set up the incident management team, right? Mm-hmm. And started dispatching the emergency vehicles from there?
Yes.
And then how did that change what you were dispatching?
I feel like that helped tremendously. In the dispatch office, you get so many phone calls and so much radio traffic that you're trying to communicate with your officers, your firemen, your ambulance workers, EMS crew, while also getting so many calls from the public, that when we were able to take the command center, or when we were able to involve the command center, they were able to take all that VHF traffic that we usually get, so we can focus on calls from the public and really do a more efficient job micromanaging what we do.
So the VHS calls would have been all of the sheriff's?
The VHF calls probably would have been more the fire. Yeah, fire and EMS working together.
Okay. So. And were you also having ambulance emergency calls during this time?
Yeah, we did. We had a couple that were stranded on a culvert that... we wanted to get help. I mean, we wanted to send ambulances everywhere, honestly, because you had people that were having smoke inhalation when they were calling. But the big deal was we had an accident in which there was a vehicle pile up with the semi truck, which unfortunately resulted in a fatality. But we were trying to get assistance there. We were trying to get assistance to. People who need, like, patient transfers from the hospital, and we really had the ambulance kind of driving all over the place, really, trying to get help to people.
So once the hospital in Ashland was evacuated, where mm-hmm. was the place that they took emergency patients to?
I thought that they took them to Oklahoma. It seems like the nursing home and hospitals, we evacuated them, I think... From what I remember, I think it was about an hour before we evacuated the town. I know for sure we evacuated the hospitals and nursing home well before that we evacuated the whole town. And I thought that they were bussing people down to Laverne, but I wasn't.
Buffalo.
Oh, Buffalo? Okay, yeah.
And then they had to take them on to Woodward. And
yes.
Plus the people that they took to Coldwater. But what about the accident people? Did they... have somewhere to go with them?
Yeah.
Did they take them to Mineola?
No, there wasn't really a place for the ambulance to go to Mineola because it was so dangerous.
Right.
And so I think what they were doing, I think you would have to talk to Millie and Joe as far as the details, because I was on a 911 call with a couple for probably about 30 to 40 minutes. No, that's a long time. It felt like that long time.
Yeah.
I was on a call with a couple when things were really bad, just trying to keep them calm and roll up their windows, you know, try not to inhale the smoke, put their clothes over their face, just trying to give them directions before, while we had that accident call. And so I had Stacy working on that, and then I think we had another dispatcher show up and also try to relieve things. Mm-hmm. And so the communication was a little bit difficult to handle. So I do recall the ambulance trying to take care of the truck driver accident, but I don't know where their destination was going because I think that was something Stacy was taking care of.
Okay. So yeah, you had lots of people calling 911 because there was fire around their house.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
in their vicinity or what?
We had some people calling 911 just to ask if they needed to evacuate, and we were like, if you heard that you needed to evacuate, you need to evacuate. And okay. We give them directions where to go. There were people who chose to stay and try to fight things on their own, and we had to say, you know, you got to get out of there. And we tried to send firemen their way and just, you know, help out as much as we could. And
did you have enough firemen to send everywhere?
No.
What type of things did you have to tell people?
It was really hard to say that we're trying to get people to your location as soon as we can, but you don't have an ETA, you know. I don't know. One of the examples was we had a gentleman stranded out in just smoke, and I had his location from the 911 pings, mm-hmm. but I had officers out, you know, going, trying to cut fence for cattle. I had officers not exactly, I'm not going to say they didn't know where they were, but I'm going to say that they had so much on their plate, it was hard to prioritize which place to
which
go
location.
For a dispatch. You know, and so I had to tell people to hang in there and then, you know, not be sure of what the outcome was. And thank God, you know, we had some civilians step in and help. And there was a lot of help from the community, but I really do think that we are understaffed both firefighter-wise, officer-wise, and EMS-wise. I'm really thankful that the casualties were as low as they were, but it was hard dispatching feeling like you were at a disadvantage almost, you know, because none of us had experienced anything like this before.
So. Did you have citizens stopping by the sheriff's office?
Oh, yeah. We actually, throughout the whole effort through the week, we had citizens stopping by and when they were allowed to come back, of course, they stopped by and gave us food and, you know, they were really thankful because I've been to conferences where they talked about the tornado in Moore, Oklahoma, I believe it was, and how dispatchers, you know, a lot of people brought food to fire, EMS, the officers, but they totally forgot about the dispatchers. And their building got hit by the tornado, so they were out plumbing. They were without plumbing for 3 days, and these people were working 12-hour shifts. And, you know, but it was not that way with us at all. We had a lot of help from the community, and we were pulling a lot of long shifts, but we did the best we could.
Okay.
Woo.
Just locking the door.
Oh, okay.
People evacuated from Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
You had family that evacuated.
Yes.
Where did they go? And how long were they gone?
Well, my other half, Matthew Harmon, I was kind of worried and I'll say freaking out. And so I kind of texted him way before the evacuation. So I was like, you need to be prepared to leave as soon as you can. If you can go home from work right now, do it. And, of course, you know, they haven't released the official evacuation, but I knew something bad was happening. So I wanted him to be safe. And so he was well aware there was a serious situation, but it was kind of hard because it seemed like a lot of people around town didn't take the alert seriously and took their time packing or whatever. And it seemed like he got like a 30-minute head start just from me being so serious, like, you need to get out right now. And he was able to tell, you know, our family to head to Coldwater is where I told everybody to go. And so they went over to Coldwater, and a lot of people went and stayed at the gym, but Matthew and his family went up to Greensburg and had a more comfortable night in a hotel. So
did you keep in contact with them after they evacuated? Did you?
When I could. I mean, there was so much time I spent on the phone, I can't just pick up my cell phone and try to check on my family. But when we had some downtime, when things were just more about dispatching fire and less about taking care of the civilian calls after the evacuation, I was able to update him. And that was a really nice relief to know that they were all safe and out of the county. Yeah.
So when did they return?
They returned when we had the all clear the next morning, though I think some people kind of snuck into town early.
I think they did too.
Yeah.
So you said you worked till 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go home then and get some sleep? And did you
It was very difficult. I think I did work the next... Yeah, I worked the next day. I don't remember if I took a different shift. I think I did work the next day. Because, it was just so crazy. And I try to be so professional and be like, oh, this is my job. Like, I try to put the motions away and be like, it doesn't matter that I only had 5 hours of sleep. I can handle this. And so I think that's probably what happened, but I didn't prepare very well for this interview, to be honest. So, I wanted to go from the heart and what I remember.
So your shift schedule that week was probably supposed to be, what, 7 to 3?
Yes.
Every day?
Yeah.
And then because of all the chaos on Monday with the fire?
Yes.
You went till 2, and then somebody came in and relieved you?
Yeah. We actually had to have an officer go pick up a dispatcher. She had already been evacuated to Coldwater, and they were not letting her family bring her back to Clark County. So they had to be at the county line and have an officer go pick her up and say, hey, we really need her to come in. Please allow her to cross the county line so we can have some help tonight.
Yeah.
And then we had kind of a floater dispatcher help with the inmate supper. And so at one point from, I would say probably about 7 in the evening till about 11 or 12, we had 3 dispatchers on duty helping each other out with phones, radio, and inmate duties.
And so like Tuesday through like, say, Saturday of that week when mm-hmm. all the fire trucks were here and we were still having a fire and
yes.
all of that, what were your dispatch job then? Were you dispatching any of the fire trucks then, or were they still out of the incident management?
Most of them were out of the incident management. We had a different protocol. Of course, people were getting very alarmed about smoldering. I remember that being a big issue, and just only dispatching flame site only because, you know, we just didn't have enough time and manpower to look at every little patch of smoke that was in the county, because 80% of the county was smoking and smoldering. So
right.
It was really a relief to have that command center dispatch because, I mean, we were just getting constant calls, people wanting to check on their homes, people wanting to return when they shouldn't, just people wanted to check in on their animals. And I think one of the hardest things was just telling people that they had to leave animals behind, for me, because I'm such an animal lover that it was hard to go against my heart and be like, you need to get out of there because you can't take care of your animals if you can't take care of yourself. So it was really difficult.
So when did you get back all of your dispatch duties? Did they...
Oh, I think...
Was it within the week, or...?
It was more than a week, for sure. We had the command set up. I remember towards the end of the week, on a Friday, I got to be involved with command and relieve Stacy in that. And it was great. I loved meeting all the help that we had. The Colorado firefighters that came in as a special unit were just awesome. Like, they seem to really know what they're doing. I mean, not that we don't do here. I mean, it's just a different animal that they're used to dealing with. So we were talking about some of the, quote, canyons, and they're like, oh, those are just little molehills, you know, because they're used to fighting on the mountains. So it's just kind of interesting seeing the difference in dynamic there.
So what type of things did you do at the command center?
Mostly just keep track of the radio, make sure that the command fire unit knew exactly where to go from what the dispatcher had said, and kind of prioritize where to send people out and what special units needed to be involved. And so, honestly, I would rather do the command because it kind of took the public out of it. and it was more getting to work on the fires themselves rather than, you know, your office calls, your sales calls, you know, all the other regular dispatch duties you have. So there's less distraction and we could focus more on the fire.
So when you were dispatching at the sheriff's office, did you have a lot of irate people?
I mean, people, I think a lot of people get mad when they're scared, and I think it's a natural reaction, and you just have to be calm and tell them, you know, we're doing as much as we can. We're not trying to put you off because of who you are, where you're from. You know, we treat everybody equal. But, I mean, there are some people that, you know, when they get nervous, they kind of get more aggressive with you. But you just have to talk with them in a calm voice and let them know that we're trying as much as we can, and we have their best interests in our hearts. And
did you have to call people back some?
A little bit.
Additional information?
Yeah. I mean, I try to. Some people don't go the extra mile as much, but it's really hard to prioritize because of my regular job. I do try to keep people updated on their incidents, and I like people to have that peace of mind. But when you have so much going on, sometimes you don't have the time to call people back, and you just have to wait till they call back or whatever, and just try to do the best you can to. I'm kind of a people pleaser, so I mean, I try to make sure people are happy.
So during the course of the week, since incident management was doing all of the dispatching for the fire and stuff, you were doing mostly ordinary things? And
yeah.
Were your ordinary things like a regular week?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, we still took a lot of the 911 calls about, you know, the smoldering smoke, and we tried to give people as much information as we could. And, you know, during the first few days, I'm really thankful that I had help with dispatch because, I mean, the day of the fire, I'm going to kind of go backwards a little bit, but, you know, I was so thankful to have a regular week because the day of the fire, you know, for the first time, you're having people screaming at you. I mean, I've been working this job for a long time, but for the first time, it seemed like I had people on the line who thought they were going to die. And at one point, I had to ask Stacy if she could help me and just talk to these people for just a minute. That's all I needed was a few minutes because, you know, you're on the phone with someone for so long and they have that energy, they think they're going to pass away, you're just trying to say, just hang in there, do the best you can, but sometimes you get in kind of your own head and your emotions start going, and it's okay to pass it on to other people. And so I was really happy to have that help for that one time where I just, things got a little bit too emotional and I had to be like, hey, I just need 2 minutes, you know, can you talk to these people for just a second? So
people who are anxious about their conditions, is it mm-hmm. something you normally deal with?
Not really.
Not
to this extent. I've never had someone be so concerned for their life as the one particular call that I had where, you know, they were just surrounded by smoke. Their other half wasn't quite listening to them and getting in the car when they should be. And
so a lot of things going on, huh?
Yes, yes. And then, you know it's a dangerous situation, but, I mean, I've dealt with domestics before where I've been calm as a cucumber and really helped some people, and it might have been a more dangerous situation than this, but because the energy going on, it just seemed like that much worse because there were so many other things happening at the same time that the emotions really were ramped up quite a bit. So.
Did you find yourself being overwhelmed because the phone kept ringing and the dispatch stuff just kept going on and on? Or
no, not so much. I mean, the phone calls don't bother me as much as the emotion in people's voices. When you, mm-hmm. I mean, I can handle the phone ringing every 10 to 15 minutes all day long or whatever, even sooner than that. When it's just like, for example, there was a pipeline explosion. I didn't dispatch that, but it was 30 miles away, and we had over 400 phone calls that night.
Right.
And dispatch was going crazy, and we were just giving information. Like, that seems like a fun night for me because it's just, it's not something that we definitely were involved in, and it wasn't like it was, all these callers were just trying to say information only, you know, we're not, mm-hmm. our lives aren't in danger, our cattle isn't in danger. Like, when you're having call after call after call where people are genuinely scared for their lives and their loved ones and their animals and their property, that can really be hard on you. That was the most difficult part. So
let's talk about the evacuation. Mm-hmm. They did that over IRIS.
Mm-hmm.
And with the sheriff's office, their officers going mm-hmm. up and down the streets with, bullhorns. And was that successful? Or did the people that were calling, had they heard that or seen it, like Facebook, or gotten an email? Or were they people that didn't have IRIS? Or
I know a lot of people actually didn't have the IRIS. I don't want to keep it on record, but Matt didn't have the message. He only got what I had, and so did his parents mm-hmm. because they opted out. But one of the things I learned from this whole incident is we can actually call the National Weather Service, and they can push notifications on evacuations. And I didn't learn that until months afterwards, after knowing this was kind of an issue. A lot of people heard from their friends or family and didn't necessarily see the officers going around town. There were some, I would say, older people that didn't trust what was going on, maybe. I don't know what the hesitation was, but I had to assure them this is true and they needed to get out of town, and there was nothing to really fear, but they just needed to comply with, you know, what the officers were saying.
So the Weather Service could do the same type of thing like they do with a tornado then?
Yeah.
And so that would have been...
That would have been so helpful if we knew that was available at the time, but I've been to conferences and stuff since then, and it's like, oh, gosh, that would have been nice.
Okay. Use that.
Yeah. Yep. So we have some more cards up our sleeves, but let's not hope there's a next time.
Yeah. But if there is, we can be more prepared.
Yes, absolutely.
You said that people did bring you food this time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not on Monday, but soon afterwards.
Yes.
They remembered you were there. Did you also go take advantage of the food at the cafeteria or at the Christian camp during the week and afterwards?
I didn't, and I don't really know that other dispatchers did. I know personally I was doing fine. My family was back in town sooner than later, and I'm kind of an independent person anyway, so I didn't really take advantage of that, and I felt honestly a little bit guilty because I didn't really have anything affect me so much. Honestly, it was more just trying to help other people. So
how did you feel when your family got to evacuate, but you had to stay here because your job required you?
I think they felt worse about it than I did. It was a bummer, and I was really afraid for them because on the way out, you know, there's fire everywhere. I heard about other people that had evacuated and parts of their cars had melted off, and, you know, they just didn't leave soon enough. But my family was so safe, and I had so many updates from Matt that I wasn't as afraid. But, I mean, it's still heartbreaking having your family leave your town, and I didn't know if I'd be safe going home for a while, but at 2:00 in the morning when you realize command is only two houses away from your own house, that, you know, you feel a little bit better about things.
They'll come knock on your door, maybe. Mm-hmm. What's your most vivid memory of the fire?
I think the most vivid memory that I had, aside from some of the frantic call taking that really kind of worked up those emotions, but I think the worst part for me visually was about 6:30 when the smoke started rolling into town and everything just became dark. And I mean,
on Monday.
And it was just like a thick fog rolling in, and you could smell the smoke, and you know, you're at your job, your emotions are getting a little bit crazy, but you have to just realize, you know, you're safe where you're at, you've got a job to do, this is okay, and you just carry on. I don't feel like our county would ever leave our dispatchers behind, so, you know.
So did it get pitch black? Dark?
It didn't get pitch black as much as it was just this odd electric dark energy. It was, I sound like a hippie talk. but it's kind of what it is. And I mean, it wasn't, it definitely was darker than what it should have been. It wasn't like a winter's day at 5 o'clock where it's, you know, pretty much time to go to bed at 6 o'clock. But, it got super dark for the spring. And
Didn't last very long.
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much settled in the evening. It seemed like it was like the sunset 3 hours earlier than it should have been.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a little bit frightening. It was just different because you're not used to that kind of weather change either, and you could see the smoke on the radar, on the weather channel, and just seeing it outside, you know, that's when it really became vivid and hit home for me.
Did the police officers that have been out driving around, did they come by and tell you what was going on outside, or were you just mainly talking to them on the radio?
It was mostly on the radio. I think that was also a very difficult part because you develop such friendships with these guys that you know what's kind of going on, but you don't see what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. So when you can tell a difference in their voice or anything like that, where you know that they're excited or panicked, or you know if something big's going on, you can hear it in their voice, and so you do feel very anxious for them, because you know anything can happen out there. And of course, with our officer having the accident with his vehicle, were
you on dispatch then?
Yeah, I think Stacy took that call. I mean, we are slammed with different calls, and I mean, most of that was on the radio though. So we're kind of back and forth. It's hard to say who did what because Stacy might have heard it over the radio, him saying we had an accident, but then it might have been me getting units out there. You know, we were just taking turns back and forth over the radio, and
so are
it
all
kind
your,
of blurs together a little bit.
Are all your 911 calls taped?
Yeah.
And what about your radio dispatches? Are they taped?
They were taped. I just don't know how long they're recorded for.
Or how long the tape lasts. Or
yeah, yeah.
How long it's kept. Because
mm-hmm.
Do they, record over them at some point?
I don't think it's recorded over. I'm just not sure.
It goes.
Because some something. Of that electric stuff just goes over my head a little.
So when you went home, at 2 in the morning, was it still pretty smoky?
Oh, it was very smoky. In the morning, you know, it was kind of foggy, and there was just that kind of ash over your windshield. And, you know, they always talk about the Mount St. Helens explosion with ash mm-hmm. being on people's windshields, but I've never experienced anything like that. But even with this fire, closer than Mount St. Helens, of course, but mm-hmm. even that was kind of mystifying and just incredible, and kind of, you know, it really kind of hits home where you can tell what it was kind of a big deal just having your ash on your car. And
did the streetlights help?
Did it?
The streetlights?
Did they help?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see with the streetlights. It wasn't too bad at 2 in the morning. Things had cleared off a little bit. But, I mean, just the smell, even in our house.
Could you still see flames
around town? I didn't see flames around town from where I was at because I was kind of in the middle of town. But I didn't go looking. I thought that if I went looking, it was going to trigger up some bad it's not bad emotions, but it wasn't something I wanted to confront head on. So,
it's safer to go home.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you been around wildfires before? I mean, you've dispatched them in the past mm-hmm. when they have had fires that they've gone out to and grass fires and stuff. But how's this kind of different?
This one's been way different in that I've dispatched a lot of fires, you know, and sometimes they go on for a couple hours and you know, this fire was a little bit different in that there was such a desperate need for help, it seemed, because we've always been able, not always, I can't say always, but it seems like in the past, there's always been more, I'm saying always again, sorry, you can retract that. It seems like in the past, there's been a lot of help readily available, and right. there, all of our surrounding counties had been dealing with other fires that this time it just seemed so desperate because there was no extra help. We didn't have a safety net. Dispatch knew it, the firemen knew it, and we were all just trying to communicate as efficiently as we could without letting on that this was bad and we have never dealt with this kind of bad fire before, it seemed like. Well, not since I've been dispatching anyway, which will be 8 years in February. So, I mean, we had a 3 mile fire, I think. It seems like 3 miles to me was a big deal for me when I was younger dispatch. It sounds like nothing compared to the acreage we had with this fire. So I'm like, 3 acres, that's not anything.
Yeah, so, it's so different.
I just remember it being kind of neat because the sheriff's office got to take out ATVs, and I was like, ooh, that's cool. fire was just completely different, it seemed like.
So who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful that you worked with?
I really feel like all of the Clark County firefighters did their best. I really can't rule out one over the other. I think Inglewood Fire was on point in trying to help early on with their mutual aid. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're always very perceptive to the world around them as far as wildfires go. Not that the other agencies aren't, but it just seems like, I don't know if it's their resources or what, but they do seem to do a lot of mutual aid. I can't put my finger on who exactly had helped out the most because when you're on the radio, you only hear unit numbers.
Yeah.
So you can't really tell which agency you're hearing the most, and you're not recognizing voices as much. My hat's totally off to Kansas and Colorado sticks out to me because I think it's amazing that we had people traveling out of state to come help us. And that was a pretty neat deal.
So I know they had extra law enforcement, like from Meade County and, and different counties around, come in and help patrol. Did they have anybody come in and dispatch with you?
We just did local dispatch, yeah. We had things. I mean, once that the first 2 days were kind of over with, I guess. it became a lot.
Things calmed down.
Yeah, things calmed down and became more normalized. And it wasn't so much of a big deal because we're so used to multitasking with Clark County being a small agency that if we have to do this, that, and the other thing at the same time, it's not as crazy as putting someone in this situation where they've only dispatched EMS or they've only dispatched fire. Right. You know, I feel like our dispatchers are kind of a different breed in that we do a little bit of everything, so we're a little bit easier to evolve and take on new tasks.
Did you have any effect from the fire, like in your job? Was there a physical effect or a way that you handle stuff now? Did it show some weaknesses in how you dispatch or in how we get ready for an emergency or anything?
Yeah, I think that it definitely showed how important moving forward with technology is, because once we had the command set up with like 800 digital radio, the communication was so much better. We've got to move forward and be progressive with our technology to improve communications, because, you know, the old ways of, you know, having everybody talk at once on the VHF where it's staticky and you could lose your signal. I mean, that's one of the hardest things for dispatch, because you're trying to listen to them talk about their flat tire and then trying to talk to someone on the 911 phone about, you know, who knows what emergency. Just being on an 800 and eliminating some of the extra chatter really is helpful. And then again, I mentioned with the National Weather Service, working more with them, with getting notifications out that we didn't realize they were such a useful resource. And, you know, I think that it really improved our relationship with other agencies in the area, not just with Sheriff's Office or Fire, but also, you know, EMS and the Weather Service and other agencies that you wouldn't even think of, the phone companies, different things like that. You know, they really tried to step up and help prevent this in the future. So it was definitely a learning experience for a lot of people in Southwest Kansas in general, I think.
So have you been involved in some of the roundtable discussions that they had afterwards of the people that had helped with different parts of the fire?
The only thing I was really involved with was kind of the command center dispatch for a couple days, and then we had kind of a, I don't want to call it therapy, but we had kind of a nice meeting in the library where we had EMS, fire, law enforcement, just talk about it, you know.
Kind of like a debriefing or
something? Yes, that's a better way to put it. It was a debriefing. And just to have that debriefing where we got together and shared our experience in person just made a huge difference, but it was just such a better emotional connection, and it just helped process things better.
And did it help you understand what everybody was doing?
Yes, absolutely.
How it kind of all fit together?
Yeah, and I really hope that we can have more discussion. Like, we shouldn't wait for big disasters for EMS, fire, and dispatchers to get together, and officers as well.
And you're talking not just the leaders, you're talking everybody.
Yes, right? Yeah, because I think it helps to have a face behind the voice, you know. I mean, not that we're going to be any less, fast or, you know,
right,
whatever. Sorry, I'm getting nervous.
If you can put a face to the voice, that helps you dispatch better?
I think that it helps communicate with less, emotion almost, because you know who you're talking to, and, you don't. Maybe some people would be different than me, but for me, knowing someone, I can relax a little bit more. I don't go from extremes thinking about what's going on, and I'm just like, oh, I know this person. I know they can handle this. Here's the information I need to give them. I do kind of handle myself professionally in that way with people I don't know, but personally, I just feel like it's nice to have a connection when I meet the people that I talk to every day with, you know. Yeah.
So did you, from having that debriefing meeting, did you find out more about what happened and how things evolved from other people's perspective? Or, you know, did it make you have a better understanding? Or
yeah, it really did, because with the 911, you know, you're wondering where the firemen are all the time, because they can't just tell you their location every single time they're at a fire. You know, they might move several miles without even telling you. So it was kind of interesting being in the debriefing, understanding the fire and EMS, just the scope of everything, where they were at, the area they were covering. I mean, we know most of that on paper, but to get that idea of what they were doing for how long and just kind of the behind the scenes, it really made everything a little bit more real and put things into perspective a little bit better. So I thought it was very helpful.
So can you perceive of anything positive that has come out of the fire?
There was so much loss, but I don't want to be so negative. I think one of the most positive things that had come out of it is that we've got better protocol for 911 and fire and EMS, emergency preparedness. Now that this has happened, we've got things on books, you know, we've got more resources. As far as the environment goes, I feel like the land looks better. It's beautiful. But I'm not a farmer. I don't really know those things. But I'm hoping that it helped environmentally a little bit, maybe. But I do feel like that it's helped us as a community kind of get closer together. And know that there are resources and people out there wanting to help and are willing to help, no matter who you are at, who you are, where you're from. I feel like that was kind of a positive outlook, just knowing that there's so many kind-hearted, helpful people out there. And I mean, it's a shame that it takes tragedy sometimes to find these things, but I feel like that is one positive that we got out of this.
So you said when you went to the incident command center, mm-hmm. that you got to meet with some of the firefighters from outside of Kansas, mm-hmm. that came. Did you get to talk with them about how their experience here was different than some of their experiences other places that they've been instructing?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get a whole lot of time talking because I was working.
Yep.
But it did seem like the difference in terrain was different for them. I mean, they had to use different equipment. They're used to scaling mountains, but maybe not so used to, like, it is a different terrain for sure for them, and I'm sure that they were constantly talking about how well receptive we were in Ashland and how they weren't used to people just waving. It's like every single person in town knew exactly who they were. Just everybody waved like we all knew each other, and they were just really, they talked mostly about how hospitable we were, mm-hmm. as Ashland people. Oh, Clark County as a whole, really.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the big things, is they were giving us a lot of compliments on how nice and receptive and thankful, yeah. and hospitable we were towards them.
As a dispatcher, did you have any involvement with the volunteers that brought hay and that type of stuff?
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of people call the sheriff's office, like, wanting to donate items, didn't know where they should put things. We had one woman call who donated, like, a couple $1,000 worth of Tupperware towards the people who had lost their things in the fire. And, you know, we handled all those calls, but we were trying to connect to the right people and make sure that, you know, items got to where they needed to be. And, I mean, it was kind of crazy for a while because we were handling both, you know, people needing resources, people wanting to give resources, and then your dangle office sales calls, you yeah. know. So,
that everyday normal
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, did you know where, did you have a list of places for those donations to go? How did you find out where to take
them? We had some people call and let us know. The feed and seed seemed to be our major hub for a while. That was really nice. Then we, like with the Tupperware, we actually had the courthouse call and let us know that they had some extra space available to house some things there. But really it seemed like, people kind of called us and we were able to get a list down of what needed to go where. And we had like a whole piece of paper printed out with, like hay and farm equipment needs to go here, food and clothing needs to go here. And, you know, we would try to assist the public the best way we could with the information coming into us. And
so about how long did you field calls like that?
Oh, gosh, like, we were having people helping us clear until April, I think. It seemed like the first week, you know, we were constantly getting calls from people wanting to help. You know, you had people all the way across the country wanting to route in hay or whatever they could. And, I mean, it was impressive. I actually took a trip that spring to go see my brother in Lawrence, and I counted 13 hay trucks on my way to Lawrence headed toward, I mean, it seemed like they were headed toward Ashland because that was the route that I was taking to Lawrence every time.
Right.
So
yeah,
they're just going the opposite direction. So I was like, oh, there's one, there's another one, just counting them off. So yep, it was just awesome.
Because since going through this experience,
mm-hmm,
what can you do or have you done to prepare for a future fire or emergency? You yourself, at your personally, or in your job?
In my job, I've been going to different conferences and kind of seeing what other counties have done with their fire and EMS dispatch. I've been taking some extra courses for general dispatch on it, not just the fire. Because I don't feel like we were underprepared, but I feel like we were caught off guard just a little bit. So just to make things easier, I did get more involved with wanting to further my education. And I took a 911 course in Dodge City with Ford County. That was just amazing. And went to a conference in Newton, Kansas over the fall that had different conference theme. I mean, it wasn't fire related though. I was a little bit disappointed, but I've been trying to further my education and dispatch. And
was it kind of emergency preparedness type,
mm-hmm, yeah,
things?
And they kind of focus more on like tornado and weather stuff, which I feel like we have a pretty good grasp on. I've heard that they're kind of interested in updating the tornado sirens to do more specifically for fire preparedness, which I also think could be kind of helpful too. And then personally, I feel like I've actually been more, I don't want to say relaxed because I don't want to insult people who have been hurt by the fire, but I feel like after this whole experience, I feel like I could handle the situation in a more calm manner. If I had to be evacuated, I would know what to do. I feel a little bit more at ease in the future just having this experience, and maybe I could even help other people in the future. I don't think I want to work anywhere else, but I could, mm-hmm, you know, share my experience with other agencies through these conferences. And I think that's really important, is sharing information with other agencies.
So what about the community? What can it do to be better prepared?
I think the community really needs to have more trust in the fire, EMS, and sheriff's office agencies. I think there seemed to be a lot of hesitation when we did do the evacuation. Of course people are going to be scared, but I really want people to know that Clark County really does have the residents' best interests in mind, and it's hard to leave family and animals and your home behind, but you know, I feel like if there's a little bit more trust in the information we put out, it could help people be a little bit better prepared.
How do you think this would have worked out if it had been Mineola instead of Ashland that had to evacuate?
Maybe if they were on you. I honestly, with my dispatch history, I feel like it probably could have been worse, only because U-54 is such a high traffic highway. If they were using that for evacuation from a dispatch point of view, I feel like that could have caused a lot of traffic accidents. I feel like we would have had a lot more casualties from people out of state who don't know what to do in a fire situation.
Or didn't know there was a fire.
Yeah. And I think that would have been disastrous. I really don't think that would have gone well. So that I would hate to imagine that happening. So, But I feel like we could. We have resources with KHP or the Kansas Highway Patrol and the surrounding agencies that are a little bit closer, like Meade County and Ford County. The county lines are a lot closer to Mineola and such a busy highway. I think that we would have more resources to contain something like that. But if you wanted to say that same date, I honestly don't think it would have. It would not have been good, because Ford County had their own things going on. So did Meade, and so did Comanche, Kiowa. It would have been not fun.
There wouldn't have been really any place for them to go.
No, I don't think so. And you know, especially having all the out-of-state traffic on that highway. I mean, that would have been a mess. We would have had calls from angry people wanting to get through Mineola and not understanding why. And, you know, that, goodness, I would not have liked that.
So the group of people that got together on the Sunday following the fire, I think, is mm-hmm. when the, and set up the volunteer stuff, the donations to go to the Ashland Feed and Seed, and the person to coordinate all those volunteers. Do you think that was helpful? Or could it have been handled better? Or maybe if we had that in place earlier, something that was part of our emergency preparedness, would it have made a difference?
I think it would have been helpful if we had something in place earlier on, only because it just seems like there were some individuals who had so much on their plate. Mm-hmm. And they were just, I mean, it was hard for them to focus on work because they were working on the volunteer job. And it would have been nice to have something in place to just get some relief for these kind-hearted people that, you know, were really, burning the midnight oil, just trying to help their community. And, I mean, there were, I don't want to name any names because I'm really bad with names, for one, but I know for a fact there were at least 3 or 4 women that were just totally in control, but, you know, had so much, I mean, not totally in control, I wouldn't say, but, because I don't know for a fact, but I know that they were just really busting their backs just trying to help. And it would have been nice if we had a plan and some more relief, because we also, you know, were accumulating stuff that we didn't necessarily need here. We needed more in Inglewood, or, you know, maybe we needed more of this kind of thing or that, but these people just were so great at organizing things and doing their best they could.
So. How much do you think Facebook hindered?
I think Facebook helped a lot, actually, because it's easier to get information on my phone just right then and there than to wait for the news to come on or wait for the paper.
Right.
I feel like that instant update really kind of helped. Uh-huh. As far as hindering, it was kind of a problem when there were a lot of rumors going around, like people were trying to get into Ashland early after the evacuation because of Facebook, and it's like, no, you need to follow protocol or what's on the news.
The people that houses had burned that hadn't, the amount of clothing that they mm-hmm. were asking for on Facebook.
Oh, I don't know that I heard anything about that, but yeah.
They were bringing donations down and stuff.
Okay. Yeah. There was so many people willing to help, though. I think it was just so warming. It made me very thankful to be living in Ashland, because it's just awesome to see a community as tight-knit as us. So.
That is. So do you have any other thoughts about this experience?
I don't know. I think I talked my face off a lot. So I get kind of nervous in an interview setting, so I kind of had like garbage in the mouth and thought, but
maybe
not. Fine. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sharing your experiences.
Yeah. I just feel like I should reiterate